Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK, and today we're speaking with Bill Belko, Chief Knowledge Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA. Bill, thanks. Thanks for being here. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much for even having me.
You have had quite the career in KM, and I'm anxious to dig into all of it, but I will begin with the same question that I largely start most of these with, and that is, what's your definition of KM? How do you explain it to a layperson?
What I find interesting is people will Google, what is knowledge management? And as you well know, there is just a multitude of definitions, and I think that is part of the problem. In that there is no standard definition that we can come up with. I try to keep it really simple. And when I'm talking to folks, and you know, knowledge management is the collection process that governs the collection, dissemination, and the use of organizational knowledge. And I find keeping it simple, people can kind of start to feel a little more comfortable with it. I don't get into that's the insights and experiences of the organization and the know-how and how do we collect that tacit knowledge. Yeah. And because it's people run away screaming.
They tend to. I get a lot of that. Funny, every time I mention KM at a cocktail party, the conversation tends to end pretty quickly. I don't know if you've had that same experience or if it's just me. Now, I do want to pull on this a little bit. Collection, dissemination, use. Beautiful. Got it. Perfect. And then you say organizational knowledge. So let's ask that second sentence. What's organizational knowledge? What's your definition of knowledge in and of itself?
That's when you have to kind of get in and define what is knowledge. And when you say insights and experiences, to me, that is the knowledge. Because when you look at an apprenticeship, let's say, and you go through an apprenticeship for a reason. Because you can sit and look at metallurgy. You can take a class in it. You can learn about silver. But when you go and work with a silversmith, all of that book knowledge is nice, but it's how does the metal feel? How does it react to heat? How does it react to pressure? How do you make it bend? And how do you polish it? And all of those tactile sight and feel and smell, are those knowledgeable things that have to be passed along by human contact? So that people, process, and technology, all of my essence goes around the people. The process is then key to that, because what are you trying to do and why and all that other kind of crazy stuff. But the people, to me, are the key of knowledge management. And also, back to your definition, is what is knowledge management? And the fact that we do it every day is another reason why it's hard to explain to people, because when you define it, people, well, I'm already doing that. Why do I need to learn about it?
If you're doing your job right, everybody should be already doing KM and they shouldn't even be calling it KM, but that's another conversation we can get into. Before then, I want to pull on this a little bit because I still want to, as you said, there's a lot of different definitions. What I just heard from you is that knowledge in the context of DISA, at least, or in your experience, is very much about experiential knowledge. It's the expertise that's been gained over one's career. But increasingly, we're seeing these trends of, well, more content and information and data all being connected with that experiential knowledge creates a full knowledge ecosystem. It's wider, it's broader, it's a much hairier beast, but for many organizations, and I fall into this camp, that's where you see the greatest value from a KM program is when everything is connected. Can you push back on that or speak to that?
That's the process. It's how do we connect to each other? And I think the pandemic has underlined that how do we connect? Because now with virtual environments that we now find ourselves in, it's I'm sitting at home. How do I connect to work? How do I connect to my coworkers? How do I connect to that system I need to use? And then how do I extract the information that I used to be able to do very quickly because I was on site and my computer was hooked to the network and all that stuff worked well. And if I needed something, I could just walk down the hallway and talk to Gladys and get that information.
You hit on a key theme there. KM has gotten very hot, much more popular over the course of the pandemic, because I think a lot of organizations realized just how poorly they were doing this, that they were making up with it through heroics and through having people being able to walk down the hall and scream, "Help me with this. Does anybody know about that?" How have you directly seen that happen at DISA? How has your job changed or the prominence of your job changed over the course of the pandemic?
I think DISA, in its forethought, was smart. We used to go through drills, and it was a publicized drill in that on this day, you would have 100% workforce participation in not coming to work and stressing the system. And I mean system as in the ISO KM standard system is how does this all work together? All 15,000 people using the system, and do we know what we're doing? Can we access that database? Those kinds of things.
The light bulb just went on for me. If I'm hearing you right, you're referring to it like a COOP and COG program, continuation of operations, continuation of government. And I never thought of the fact that that's for KM preparedness as well. That shines a light on whether KM is effective in an organization.
Who is KM in live practice right there?
So is DISA just a real leader in this? Is it due to your leadership? Or would any agency that has a solid COOP plan actually be in pretty good KM shape? I mean, is that too much of a leap?
No, I don't think so. And DISA, because of what DISA does, we have to be prepared at any one time for the 9/11s to happen. We are the backbone of DoD communication and computing. So if we don't work, there are big ramifications of if DISA doesn't work. So that practice and drill is not just something that we do on a desktop, and move the cubes around and okay, this group will go there, this group will do. We actually do it in practice. And I think pretty successfully because when the day came and they said government telework, there were organizations that fell apart. And for DISA, we didn't miss a step. It was okay. And how we do that is there is a corporate email sent out, take your computers home. And that's all, basically all the message says. And everybody knows what to do. There were glitches. I can't say it worked seamlessly because normally we do it for a 24-hour period. The next day you're back at work. Well, 2 years later, we're still.
I remember a couple of weeks in, I'm thinking like, "Hey, this is great. EK was prepared for this. We're doing wonderfully. We're going to throw a party next week when we're back in the office." And then, after the first year, I started realizing just how wrong I was about that. But so this is great, Bill, and you just connected a really interesting dot for me. But let's talk about how DISA got there, how you got the agency to the place where it was ready. I know there are things that you can share and things that you can't, so use your own judgment with that. But walk us through. I mean, you've been with the agency, I think, quite a while, right? Can you tell us about your big accomplishments and what you've been working on?
I personally don't have big accomplishments. I think the KM team has big accomplishments and DISA has big accomplishments. A KM program is not dependent on a single person. It's an organizational lift. And I don't know if you've experienced it as chief knowledge officer, I tend to be the cheerleader. The team does the work. And I think it's important to underline that it's the team's effort. I just kind of push the doors open and keep my foot in the door and keep talking while they sneak in.
True servant leadership. I love it.
Really, I cannot take credit for that. And as you well know, KM is kind of a creeping thing and, crawl, walk, run kind of thing. Well, we're still kind of crawling. Big accomplishments. We have the DoD and Federal KM Symposium yearly. This coming year, we're going into a kind of a hiatus. With me leaving the agency, the team doesn't feel they've got enough to do everything that we're doing a big internal KM push. We've gone through a reorganization. We've been moved and now partner tightly with data. Our data office and knowledge management office are now unified. And I think that's an important step for any organization, because if we say knowledge helps the world go around, well, data is the, I'll put it in quotations, knowledge in a sense. And it's how you treat that, and it's how you understand that. And I think artificial intelligence, machine learning, and all of the new buzzwords, that is, I think, why we're starting to see a movement to what is knowledge management. And it's the management part that we get pushback, I feel, on, because then we start, this is how you handle metadata. This is how you do this. This is, and it's those, that governance that organizations don't like, and records and document management is raising its ugly head, and NARA is saying the organization has to do this. Well, if you look at the process of knowledge management, people doing things and creating content, what do I do with that content? And there's my document management, records management. So when we look at the process flow of knowledge management, data, information, knowledge, and wisdom, I have knocked out wisdom. I have cut that off. I have replaced it with innovation. I think that's important, because that is the active part of the triangle. And when I think of wisdom, I think of a Greek guy sitting in a toga. I can't relate to that. But when I say innovation, that's decision-making. That's doing my job. It's the activeness of knowledge management.
It's the outcomes. It's the business value. It's the ability to actually do something with the knowledge.
Exactly. And that's when I can start talking towards return on investment of investing in knowledge management in the practice. So when we start talking to management and we're saying, okay, you need to hire a full-time equivalent, an employee, and you have to pay them to do this knowledge management, most organizations go, we can't afford that. Particularly in the government, we're restricted. So you add it on as an additional duty. And by doing that, you don't really evaluate the employee on the good work that they're doing. So it starts to slide back. And now we're not doing it because you're focused on what your mission truly is, why you were hired. And so knowledge management then takes a backseat. And now the management can say, see, it wasn't successful.
So, you know, you hit on a critical point here. And by the way, it does happen on the commercial side as well, that, oh, so-and-so's got a little extra time. Let's have them do KM in their extra time. It just doesn't work. And yet, you are a chief knowledge officer. It is what you're evaluated against. It's what you've been judged about and, frankly, what you're paid for. So clearly, DISA, once again, had some pretty solid foresight here to say KM matters. Did you help shape the role that you're now in, or how did this come to be?
Yes, I guess I did. Many years ago, DISA went through a very large reorganization. And I, as the quote-unquote knowledge worker at the time, worked in the organization that was assisting in that reorganization, formulation of who's going to go where, what the departments are going to be called, what this organization is going to look like, and explained to them the importance of capturing what we do, disseminating that, the experiential piece of institutional knowledge and how important that is. So they stood up the knowledge management. They came to me and said, you win. Okay. Here's your office. Who do you want to be in it? So I got to pick my staff, which was wonderful. And we've been on the march ever since.
Bill, you very nicely said that the credit belongs to your team and DISA. And I believe that to be true. But it sounds like KM is a solid, real thing at DISA because of you, based on what you just shared. So there's some credit that belongs to you as well. That's pretty impressive. Talk to me about the ROI. So you mentioned the fact that you're in a position to actually be able to speak with leaders and discuss the returns on the KM program that you lead. How do you do that? This is always of interest to our listeners. And it's especially hard in federal agencies where there is no widget for sale. In most organizations, there's no recognition of quote-unquote profit, even though some agencies do generate revenue. This is not one of them, as far as I know. So how do you talk about ROI?
Well, as a knowledge practitioner, we have to wear different hats at different times and different hats during the same conversation. And that's when you kind of have to get into the process and you have to ask the group or person, why are you doing that? Because many times when you ask that, you'll kind of get the deer in the headlights because people have been doing it and no one's asked them why. And when they start to explain the why, then you can start to tease out what the metrics may or may not be. And you can start to talk to those metrics and how well are you accomplishing that? How do you measure what you're producing, the why? And then put a value on it. And there are only basically three different things: is time, cost, or quality. And how do you put dollars to those or some type of metric against that? So if it's an employee, how many hours do they spend doing that? Those kinds of things. Do you want to speed that up? Now I can measure my minutes. And a lot of times I find that people don't measure the things. It's easy to measure some stuff. And the more difficult things, it's difficult and they're not going to measure it. And that to me is the key when we start talking knowledge management and it's the people in the process. And you want them to evaluate that process. And then now what is your to be? Now let's look at the gap. And did you meet what you wanted to do? And all of a sudden the light goes on and they go, wow, that's what KM can do for me. So it's a slow process because you got to get in front of the people. And when you start talking about evaluating a process, that takes time. Because now you're forcing them to document that process that they've never done before.
And that's where KM gets squishy. And as a previous guest just said, some squishy is good, some squishy is okay, but it does get tough when it comes to the outcomes. Let's talk about one specifically. I know a lot of federal agencies in particular, based on their demographics, are very concerned about the brain drain. The fact that a lot of the expertise of the organization is heading towards retirement, is walking out the door. What has DISA done about that? What has your role in that been to capture as much of that knowledge and counteract the brain drain?
Well, it's funny you ask that. We're trying to recognize a transformation. And how do we talk to the workforce about that transformation? Currently, it's tagged Workforce 2025. And as we go through this drill, and that's what we've been doing this past couple of months, is trying to tease out lines of effort. And currently, line of effort number three is knowledge management. And how do we go through and basically build a knowledge base that is open, collaborative, and transparent, where people can find what they need? When I ask you to give me all the information you have about a spotted salamander, I would get a deer in the headlights and your fingers would go to Google. So how do we create that Google for an organization, that knowledge base? And now with new technology, how do we leverage that new technology to support that knowledge base? How do we make it so that the workforce sees value in that knowledge base? So we use the technology. So you tag articles, you rate the articles, the knowledge articles you put in that knowledge base. You can monitor who is watching the knowledge base, who is accessing the information. Then leveraging a system, leveraging the technology to build a knowledge base for the organization that it can use, that it becomes a semblance of a Google-like thing. So using the technology then to advance that search even more is how do you then tag those knowledge articles so that they become more relevant? The higher the rating of the knowledge article, the higher in the list when you search for it, the more relevant stuff is at the top of the list, just like Google.
I mean, this is the ideal state, right? And a lot of organizations are seeking this, a place where knowledge can be shared easily, where it can ideally be related to other knowledge articles, people, types of content, the data that you mentioned earlier, that it can be ranked, interacted with, surfaced, pushed forward, pushed to the user. Is this a reality at DISA? Is this something that you've got in a pilot or prototypes phase? Where are you with this as an initiative?
Well, it is a reality at DISA. The Global Service Desk does use a knowledge base to support the Global Service Desk. We have customers, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and they access that information to help solve their own problems. Because when you, in the sense, knowledge management is someone finding the answer to their question easily. So, if your customer can find the information easy, then they don't have to come to you and you can use your time to do something else.
To create new knowledge, to innovate, to collaborate, to go knock off early and have a beer, whatever it might be, it's better than repeating yourself, right?
That's it. So, what we've done at DISA is our global service desk has allowed the knowledge management team to carve out a small space in this knowledge base and experiment with it. We've been playing with the technology so we better understand it so that when we go and talk to, I'll call it our customers, the workforce of DISA, and say, this is how we can leverage this to make your job easier. We've started working very closely with our workforce development portion of the organization and looking at the employee life cycle as a structure to build this knowledge base around. So if I look at that life cycle, which starts when the employee finds the advertisement about a particular job, they apply for the job, they interview for the job, they're accepted. Now they come into the workforce and they mature as they go through all the way to the very end. So, how do you support that employee when they go from a non-employee to a novice employee, a beginner? They mature and now they're a contributor and now they become a mentor because they've been there for a while. And then now how do you help them exit the organization? That whole life cycle. So if we look at that knowledge base, how do you carry that employee through that life cycle? Because if you say our employees are our most important asset, then we need to treat them that way. And knowledge management is that thing that can help the organization support that employee.
Well, I also love that vision of a knowledge base as the place that can support the entire life cycle of the employee, from being new, just asking the how do I's, needing to be upskilled, to graduating to being an expert and a content creator, a knowledge creator, to being a SME that really needs to transfer their knowledge to others all the way across the spectrum of experience. So that's a neat vision. I want to go back to one other point that you mentioned because I think it's really interesting. I'm curious if you see it as a trend. So KM has been reorged to sit next to data. And there are historical KMers that would be rolling in their graves after years of arguing that knowledge isn't data and data isn't knowledge. But this to me is very exciting. This is very cool. This is very practical. And what we're seeing a lot of is that KM is the foundation for effective AI and machine learning. Was that the justification or the driver for this reorg, or was it just a happy coincidence?
During discussions prior to the reorganization, there was considerable talk and information gathering at a functional working group, and you could come in and out of that working group at will. It was publicized, the group was formed, and information was gathered by the seniors in this open, free-form conversation. And what was interesting is the many times knowledge management was brought up, And data is where we're going. We're DISA. We are data. So it looked like a good marriage because, again, if we look at knowledge management as a process, it starts somewhere. And if we look at knowledge management is putting into practice for an employee to answer their own question, well, how do they get to it? And is it the ones and the zeros, or is it the Excel spreadsheet? Is it the PowerPoint presentation? If I can't find it, then I have to remake it. And if you look at the process of data management and the process of knowledge management, there's data governance, there's knowledge management governance. All of the characteristics are very, very similar. So when you bring them together, and kind of like a tongue and groove, all of a sudden the gray area is really gray. You almost can't tell where one starts and one stops.
I am so on board with you here. And actually, I'm seeing it as a trend where a lot of organizations are realizing that knowledge, information, data, structured, unstructured, they've been creating their own silos by thinking about information as being of different types, when in fact, it's all needed to do the job. The more it's related, the better the job is going to get done. It sounds like this is trending in the right direction there. That's impressive. So now I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag here, Bill. You're about a week from retirement, right?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact.
So congratulations. What are you doing in retirement? What's going to be your number one hobby or fun thing?
That's a really good question. My wife is terrified. I'm a long-distance cyclist. Wow. in the warm weather, I'm doing, 100-mile treks on the Eastern Shore and that kind of thing. So that will obviously consume time.
When you look back, I mean, you've been doing KM for a while. What have been the biggest changes? And what are you most excited about as you close your career at DISA? What are you most excited about how KM has changed?
Excited about the technology, because fortunately or unfortunately, when people see a problem, they are going to throw technology at it, irregardless. And when they start doing that, personally, I think it's because they don't understand the problem. Let me go buy this new widget or gadget or whatever it is and see if it fixes my problem. So with artificial intelligence and machine learning and all of those other things, it's connecting them together. I see, as I said before, is the marriage of data and knowledge is a good marriage. They are supportive of each other. They cannot, as you said, be siloed. And in that transparency, in that merging of the two activities, is where we start to see the value of what people know, how they know it, can they relate it to someone else, and that process of relating that institutional knowledge that you talked about, the brain drain, is how do we capture that? Exit interviews are not the way to do it.
No,
But how do you capture the knowledge of a worker through the work life cycle as they move from a novice, new employee, asking questions and putting that whole process in practice? And there's another challenge, I think, for any organization is how do we put that knowledge capture, knowledge extraction into a normal workday so that it's something that we do every day instead of something special and it's a process that sits outside of my normal work cycle.
I think that's such an important point. I want to repeat this because this is, I think, where a lot of organizations fail to do knowledge capture correctly. They think of it as this thing that is discrete, that gets done when a person is leaving or when a project is done, instead of just being part of the business. And the best way to think about knowledge capture is how do we embed it in someone's work through technology, through process, through culture, so that it's just natural and it just flows, right?
that's, to me, the holy grail of knowledge management, data management, organizational management, workforce development, all of that working in concert, just as you said. And it's not something that we do outside of our normal work routine. It is our work routine. So how do we create the water cooler of the organization, the gossip corner, so that the grapevine that we do out in the hallway becomes our normal, how do we exchange information, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and even more important now that most folks are remote, right? What is the digital water cooler? How do you replicate the social learning that was naturally taking place in the cafeteria? So, Bill, you are closing out a very successful run at DISA and a very long and auspicious career in knowledge management. What advice do you have for somebody who wants to be you, who wants to follow a similar career path?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. That's a great question because, you know, I did knowledge management when I was active duty in the Navy and didn't know it. I sat every morning at a major naval hospital and reached out to the other major naval medical installations, extracted data about blood components, how many bags of whole blood do you have, how many units of packed platelets do you have, blah, 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 assimilated all of that into a report for the Surgeon General of the Navy, so that if there was an event, how would the Navy respond with blood products? How would we move them? Those guys, that was knowledge management. And that's what I said, what I was saying at the beginning. People are doing knowledge management and they don't even know it. So how do we as knowledge management practitioners call attention to that and say, we're not telling you to do anything different. We're just calling attention to it so that we can do it more effectively. And how does it benefit the organization and how do we make it better?
Bill, I put this in terms of this is a very hipster thing to say, right? I was doing KM before it was cool. And I talk about this a lot. A lot of the folks that we have on the podcast just filled a gap. They basically just said, this can be done better. We're losing knowledge, or people can't find what they're looking for, or people aren't learning fast enough. So they just started filling the gap. And it's amazing. I think you've spent your entire career filling those gaps and doing what needed to be done. What specifically, from an education standpoint, a reading list standpoint, conferences, how does somebody get smart on KM? Where would you send them? What would you tell them to do?
First, develop the passion, because without the passion, the resistance you're going to get, you'll lose your sails because the wind isn't there. Second is, it's the understanding that you're doing knowledge management and the passion that it's going to take to keep that going, to keep a team going, to keep them incentivized because of the resistance the organization's going to place upon trying to advance that knowledge management. Education-wise, expose yourself to as many people as you can. We have the federal knowledge management community that meets quarterly. If you're in the government, join that.
You founded that community, I believe. Isn't that correct?
Well, actually, it existed long, long ago. It fell apart. I spoke at KM World. The FBI was at KM World. They heard me and invited me to come talk to the FBI during their knowledge management week. So I did a couple of presentations to them. They then started working with me and said, you know, how can we make this even better? And I said, I have a vision of bringing the government together and let's learn about knowledge management so that we can do it more cohesively. 9/11 happened because we didn't share information. I won't call it knowledge because when you know about this piece and you know about that piece and this other piece, that's information. It's not knowledge until you bring the pieces together and can respond or react to them. So the FBI said, we have connections. We'll send out an email. We sent out the email, had a meeting. We expected 5, maybe 10 people. 40 people showed up and it was standing room only. So we just kept building on that. That happened around 2006 and been going ever since.
Excellent. So, congratulations. So you resurrected it. You didn't found it. That's an even better word.
Then we started the Knowledge Management Symposium in Baltimore in association with AFSEA. And that worked really well because my vision was, let's create a KM world for the federal government. It's free. If you're a government employee, you can come. So we would have 3 days of knowledge management discussions, open workshops. We tried all different sorts of things. Pretty successfully, I think.
The attendance was wonderful the last year that I was there, and really engaged participants. It was great to see.
Yeah. And I really think it's important for that sort of thing to keep going. I'm disheartened that it's not going to happen next year, but the level of effort that it takes to put the thing together really puts a stress on the KM team, let me tell you. So the fellow who's sliding into my position said, let's put it on a hiatus. Let's focus internally with the whole Workforce 2025 that I spoke to before. I think it's going to bring KM into a real more active role in the organization and that formalization of how do we share information across the agency.
And all that's good guidance and advice. Now, Bill, I've taken a ton of your time and I've really enjoyed the conversation, as I always do when we get to speak. Let's close with this. In all your experience and all your learnings, what's that one thing that an organization's just got to do to get KM right?
The organization has to have a senior champion. That individual or individuals that are at the senior level that can keep the conversation going. Yes, you can start KM ground roots. I've seen that work, but it only comes up to a certain level and it's isolated generally. You know, this one group will start a knowledge management effort and that's great for that group, but it doesn't connect. And for knowledge management to work well, it has to be an enterprise endeavor. Yes, you can have pockets of it, but if the pockets don't connect, then going back to my whole idea of supporting an employee in an organization falls apart. So creating that access to information in an open, collaborative, and transparent organization, so to speak, it is really, really important. So that senior champion to me is the keystone to make the whole arch stand up.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's so true. I mean, you just see it time and time again, even if it's just an individual, just one right person in the right place with the right energy, the right knowledge, and frankly, the right ability to market KM can completely transform an organization, just like you've done at this one. So with that, Bill, really appreciate your time. Bill Balko, Chief Knowledge Officer for a little while, anyways, at DISA. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here and thanks for sharing your thought leadership, Bill. To our listeners, thanks for joining us for this episode of KnowledgeCast. Check out more information on knowledge management, information data management on our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. Have a great day, y'all.